Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the SFLC podcast. Here I am, Ryan Sprague, and, you know, for those of you who have listened and tuned in, you know that I kind of moved a little bit. I made this little change. We were talking with James Lynch about it, and I finally got myself situated in Austin, Texas, a place that right now is kind of going through a rainy season, but still gorgeous regardless. And I figured it was just right to bring on a guy whose whole company is based in Austin, Texas. And we're going to kind of get into that here in a few minutes. But I want to bring on, and I can't believe it's taken me this long to bring him on, we have managing editor from Flow Combat, Mr. Hunter Holmsteck. Hunter, thanks for taking the time with us today, man. How are you doing out there?
I'm doing wonderful, man. Kind of like you alluded to, I'm just blessed that you finally thought that I was worthy of being on your show. So that feels good, man. Thank you.
Well, in fairness, I took over the show a little bit ago from Mike Heck. I know that you've had some talks with Mike. Mike is doing great things. He's over at Fansided right now. He's hosting the Extra Rounds podcast. But I got to be honest, I thought that he already brought you on the show and you guys cut it up. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not going to reach out right off the bat because he's already been on the show and we'll give him a little bit of time until we bring him back on the show. But man, so great to have you grace the presence of the SFLC podcast.
The pleasure is truly mine, man. I love this kind of stuff. I love cutting it up with you guys. Like you said, Mike's a great guy and we had been on with him before. So it's all good, man. I'm just messing around.
So you're getting ready to go to Vegas. I believe you haven't left home yet to go to Vegas. What's the criteria once you end up getting out there and you just kind of put yourself in fast forward mode?
That's a great way to describe it, man. That's, you know, I could think for 10 minutes how to describe it and not come up with anything better than that. So fast forward, super appropriate because fight week just gets, it's madness, man. There's so much going on, not just scheduled events. Obviously, you know, you have the UFC's PR schedule and the events that they set up. So you have to go to all that. Well, I mean, you don't have to, but if you want to do a good job, you should go to all that. But then there's other fighters always there. Fighters not on the card, managers not on the card, coaches not on the card. So you never know what you might just bump into randomly when you go to a fight night, especially in Las Vegas and especially a fight of this magnitude. So you just have to be on high alert all the time and understand that there's no such thing as working hours during fight night. Every hour is a working hour, and sleep is like a privilege, you know. So I don't expect to get much sleep. I know James Lynch is going to be joining me there, and Damon Martin's going to be there as well. So I'm sure the whole crew will be in fast forward mode, as you said, man. It's crazy. You know, the last two events that I went to on the ground, we broke all the records for Flow Combat views on social media and traffic records and things like that. So that's what I want to do again. Every time I go to a UFC event, that's my goal, is just break the previous record.
So you mentioned how UFC is kind of its own beast, and we watch all the content that comes out throughout the week. How special is it for this Khabib and Conor fight to be out in Vegas? You know, we've heard numbers being tossed around about how many pay-per-views it's going to buy. It's going to be one of the biggest UFC events in the history of UFC. Do you adhere to that notion, or do you just kind of play it by ear and find the stories as they happen?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely do think that this is the biggest pay-per-view event of all time. And I mean, if this card happened in 2013, you know, something like this, there would be no question about it. But with pay-per-views declining in general, I think the eventual number might be lower than people expected. It's still going to be huge no matter what. I just don't see that 2 million figure that's getting floated around. I don't see it even approaching that. But we'll see exactly how big Conor is and exactly how much the general public buys into his rivalry with Khabib. And I mean, what you can't ask for a better matchup than this as a fight fan, man. Like, if you don't buy this card, then there's no card you're going to buy. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like you said, as far as taking things as they come, I think that's part of Fight Week in general, kind of what I was saying earlier. You never know what might pop up. You gotta roll with the punches when you're on the ground. So it's going to be a little bit of both.
Now, Hunter, you were mentioning all the stuff that you did on Flow Combat. And one of the most recent videos you posted, I can't get enough of. You'll see me on this, like, watching it on my phone or on my iPad or on my Apple, like, once every other day since you guys posted. It was you and some of your friends doing a blind taste test, because we also know that Conor is an entrepreneur now. He owns Proper 12 Irish Whiskey, and you guys were breaking it down. So I want to get it from you, if anybody ever asked this directly. Comparatively to Jameson, and comparatively to those who drink whiskey on a regular basis, just how proper is Proper 12?
It is super proper, man. It is all the way proper. Now, like, that's a big thing in the wake of this, is that a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, Proper paid us. First of all, if anybody thinks that I am big enough and my reach, or Flow Combat's reach, is big enough that Conor McGregor or Proper would come to us for a review instead of Ariel or somebody like that, like you're crazy that they would come to us with that offer. That was 100% legit blind taste test, man. Like, we really had no idea what we were drinking when, and we do all drink whiskey. I will not say that I'm an Irish whiskey, you know, connoisseur by any means. I usually stick to bourbon and things like that, but between those three, there was legitimately no doubt in any of our minds that Proper 12 was a little tier above. Now, we're still talking, excuse me, a $25, $30 bottle of whiskey. You know, we're not into top shelf stuff. It probably can't hang with $100 bottles of whiskey or anything like that. But against those two, which in America are the bottom shelf, you know, the well Irish whiskeys at most bars, against those two, it definitely blew them away.
Wow. See, and the thing is, as you were doing that, I was kind of angry at all of the people in the MMA community that all went out and got their bottle, or their bottles, plural, of Proper 12 whiskey, because I don't think that it hit Austin, Texas yet. So is this something like we have to look at? It's like, look, man, if I don't have this Saturday, I'm going to be infuriated watching this Conor Khabib fight, not drinking Conor's whiskey.
I mean, if you're rooting for Conor, you got to drink it, right? There's no other way to root for Conor than to drink Proper 12. I guess if you're rooting for Khabib, you can go get some vodka or something like that. But we made the recipe too, the cocktail recipe. You know, we made the red panty night using Proper number 12. So I feel like that should be the official drink of UFC 229 if you're rooting for Conor.
And it's interesting that you say that, because obviously in the MMA community, we have our favorite fighters. A lot of us started out as fans first and then reporters second. But as you kind of get into this, you want to be unbiased, impartial, and you look at what's going on. And, you know, you saw Conor kind of try and get into Khabib's dome a little bit. Do you buy into the hype that Conor was able to do that? Do you think that Khabib was flustered with Conor and his antics?
I definitely don't buy that at all. Not because Conor didn't do a great job and try. I just feel that Khabib is unbreakable in that regard. He's cold steel all day. He's been doing this since he literally wrestling bears since he could walk. Like, come on. He's not fazed by anything at this point. So I don't see Conor getting, I think Conor may have, you know, pissed him off a little bit, something like that, sparked up a little emotion in him. but I don't feel that it's any degree that it's going to affect him on fight night.
And it'll be interesting because I've heard a lot of different variations about what's going to happen with that fight. Everybody wants to offer their 2 cents. Some people are saying that Conor's only chance is within the first round or two. Other people are saying if this goes later, it's Khabib all day. And I've even heard people who have inversed that, where they've said, I actually think that these fighters have studied enough about each other that this fight is going to go the exact opposite the way that they see it, where, you know, Conor actually has a good ground game and Khabib might have that punch-out power that we haven't seen from him in his last couple of fights. If I'm asking you directly, how do you see this fight breaking down in your eyes?
I agree with a lot of things that you mentioned there. You know, kind of everybody sees it going one of two ways. Either Khabib mauls him on the ground or Conor catches him standing up quickly. Ultimately, I do think Conor's a legit brown belt in jiu-jitsu. I think his ground game is being slept on a little bit, but it's not nearly good enough to deal with Khabib if it hits the ground still, in my eyes. And on the flip side, Khabib may be working on a stand-up a lot, but it's not going to catch up with Conor. So that's the great divide, right? In the end, I simply believe that Conor will land that shot and end things. Round two, TKO is what I'm feeling. Much like the Eddie fight, I don't think he'll dominate it like the Eddie fight, but I think it'll end similarly to that. It just comes down to what, you know, it's like a faith thing at this point, a faith or belief. Do you have more faith in Conor to impose his will or Khabib to impose his will? The X's and O's don't matter so much in this matchup to me because it's so obvious who has which advantages where. So it just comes down to where do you believe the fight will take place, and I just see that happening. Khabib's been hit before, and getting hit by Conor is a totally different animal. He seems crazy laser-focused going into this fight, and I like everything I'm seeing from him leading up to the fight. That said, it would not surprise me in the slightest if Khabib just threw him around like a ragdoll for 5 rounds, 2 rounds, however long it took to either TKO or submit him. Wouldn't surprise me one bit. I'm just saying I have slightly more faith in Conor's left than I do in Khabib's ability to control long stretches of the fight. So the only thing that would surprise me is if Conor submitted Khabib. That's like the only out. That's the only outcome that I would be like, holy shit, that happened. Pretty much anything else, including Khabib catching Conor on the feet, because Khabib has some striking and he definitely has power. And as Conor gets tired, you know, we've seen him gas in fights. I could totally see a scenario where Conor's a little gassed in round four and Khabib catches him and falls up on the ground. So who knows, man? Like I said, if Conor, I feel like I should make a bet. Should we do an on-air bet? If Conor submits Khabib, I'll do something crazy.
I'm down for that. No, absolutely. Actually, that's a very popular segment that we do on our show where, like, we make a fight bet and we have to do something like, you know, it's not long. We put it on Facebook where we're either doing a push-up challenge or, you know, we have to do some sort of an athletic thing. So what are you thinking, Hunter? Are you thinking we make it easy and say, like, if Conor submits Khabib, like, both you and I have to do, what, 40 push-ups? Does that sound legit to you?
That's perfect. Let's go with that. I like it.
Perfect. All right. So before we end up getting into flow combat, and Hunter that we know who's covering this crazy world that a lot of people don't see from MMA media, one thing I want to address about the Conor Khabib fight is, look, we understand that Conor is so polarizing that he has so many fans. We understand that, you know, Khabib has his background and a lot of it comes from Russia and from everything that's going on there. Is it fair to say that, look, you can have somebody that you want to win in this fight, but you understand accordingly that these fighters might not be the greatest people in the world? I mean, we've seen all sorts of athletes from all sorts of walks of life that have had this mantra of not being the greatest person in person.
Oh, absolutely, man. I try to separate the two as much as possible. You know, I don't expect my athletes, the athletes that I look up to be great human beings. That's not why you're aware of them. You know, that's not why you follow them in the first place for their efforts on a humanity scale. So I don't really care about that at all. I know a lot of people make a big deal about it, but I'm here to watch some fights. And I mean, I liked other sports before I liked MMA. I liked football. I liked basketball. I didn't care about the football players off the field. It's the MMA world is always under such a microscope. In the MMA bubble, you know, you get those hardcore fans all lumped together and they all want to talk about this. But in the grand scheme of things, man, I really don't think it matters at all. Like, let's just enjoy some fights, enjoy the reason that we're drawn to the sport in the first place, and let the rest of it play out. Now, obviously, when there's legal implications to things that they're doing, that's a different story. But if you just want to judge somebody's character or something like that, like, who really – I personally don't care. Like, I truly do not. Do what you want. I love John Jones. He's probably my favorite fighter. There's no problem about it. I'm a huge John Jones fanboy. So I love John Jones. That's the perfect example.
No, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, we'll get into John Jones here in a little bit. But I think that you put it out there quite well. You know, obviously, when we are in the media, we can't show a bias. We have to be unbiased about who's winning or what's going on. But because of this, we're all people. We have our fandom. You know, we know where our loyalty is, and we don't sway from that. But it's glad to hear that put, like, into words. But let's talk a little bit about you. I know that we've kind of already cut it up for, you know, 14, 15 minutes. But, Hunter, you've taken over Flow Combat. You're the managing editor there. And there's a lot that goes into that job. You know, I write for My MMA News, and Eric Kowal hit me up. I have a couple of interviews set up today regardless. And it's a nonstop job. It's almost like you have to hustle in this game to get that recognition.
Oh, man, you're on point with the description. The fast forward, the hustle, you know, that's exactly what it is. There's no stopping at all. Like, people don't understand. I mean, I work remotely personally. You know, I don't even work out of any office or anything. I just work from my house, which is both awesome and the worst thing ever, because I'm never off the clock. I'm never on or off the clock. As things happen, they need to get out there. You have to keep the flow of the website going. You need to keep things moving along. MMA moves so fast that you will absolutely get left behind if you take your foot off the gas. And momentum is a very real thing in websites and in your social media presence and everything. If you take a week off, like, there's been times where I've taken vacations and had a hard time, you know, maybe lining things up while I was on vacation and keeping things flowing. Those next couple, 2-3 weeks back, you spend catching up and trying to reestablish whatever momentum you had. So it never stops, man. That's the biggest thing, is just keep going, keep plugging. And you find out really quickly which guys are in that with you, I feel like. And that's something that's been a huge lesson to me since I've kind of taken over in this editor position, kind of making my little crew, my little team. I feel like we have an excellent squad of just hustlers and grinders right now. And that's what you need. You find out quick, man, rotating through guys who say they want to write, say they want to cover MMA, and then they actually do it for a month and they're like, I can't keep up anymore. You know, I need my Saturdays back. Well, in MMA, the fights take place on Saturday, so I'm sorry about your luck, man.
No, that's a good point. Every now and then you get a Bellator card on a Friday night, you know, Glory Kickboxing on Friday, so you kind of end up pulling double duty where you'll have one fight one night and one fight on Saturday. Weekends are not in this business. But, you know, it's really funny because I came from the writing, the journalism background, as I'm sure a lot of the MMA media members did. But, you know, you were kind of the protege of the great Dwayne Finley. I mean, that man is just savage. There's no better way to describe him. But, you know, we talk about what it means to be a writer and what it means to be an editor. And in this sport, it's so new because it seems like there are so many people who are writing that started as fans first and writers second, but you're the kind of person that you were a writer first and stumbled on to UFC and MMA. So how did that transition as far as like the MLA format or the Chicago style or inverted pyramid? Like, how important is that in this business?
That's great stuff, man. I feel like I'm back in college right now. That's awesome. Yeah, I did. I come from a strict journalism background where I was actually working for my school's newspaper. I went to West Virginia University, and I was the editor of the arts and entertainment section of that. So I was covering music mostly, a lot of music, arts, theater, things like that, and managing a little stable of writers then too. So it's kind of funny how things have come full circle where I'm back in that kind of editorial position where maybe I'm not writing as much as I used to or would like to sometimes, but keeping things moving. So that was the perfect setup for me now. You know, that experience is crazy. Like you said, coming up, kind of Dwayne's protege. That was my introduction to all this on the MMA side, because he was the senior editor at Flow Combat, and I was writing. But also, what I think maybe a lot of people don't know or realize is that I was never hired at Flow Combat to write at all. I was actually hired on the marketing side and to do the marketing and kind of promoting the live events and setting up ads and managing social media and things like that, because I did have a marketing background as well from some work that I did throughout college and after college. So I was never supposed to be in this position at Flow. It just happened that way, and my skill set really lends itself well to this. So it came to be almost by chance, to be honest. Things just circled around this way, and then I was in that position. So I had to draw on my experiences from college at the newspaper and also everything I learned from Dwayne. I mean, for the 2 years Dwayne was at Flow Combat, he and I were like inseparable. You know, I literally texted Dwayne more than my parents, more than my girlfriend. I felt like I was almost dating Dwayne in a way for 2 years, which is way scarier than people might think. It's terrifying. Never date Dwayne Finley. Don't do it. Right? He's already married, so you guys don't have a chance anyway. Yeah, man. So it was just staying in the trenches with him for that 2 years was an invaluable experience for me. And now kind of just putting my own twist on things, my own touch on things. And I like where Flow Combat's at right now, but I like even more where we're going.
So when you talk about the concept of reporting on MMA, this is unlike any beast we've ever seen. You know, we know the major players in NBA. We know the major players in Major League Baseball and the NFL. This sport of mixed martial arts and UFC and everything that gets entailed into that, it's kind of taken a different approach. It's no longer the concept of, you know, we need to write AP style where, you know, the first headline really tells you all the things that you need to know in the story, and then you kind of break it down as you get more into the article. MMA has kind of gone more towards social media because that's the way of the world. Is that something that kind of frustrates you as a writer who grew up in a journalism background?
It actually does the opposite. It's probably surprising for a lot of people to hear that because, like you said, I do come from a strict journalism background. I care about writing as an art form, but I like where it's headed right now because it's leveled the playing field to a degree. If you have these sensational writers, they'll still stand out. You know, that's what a lot of people miss, I think, is that great writing is always going to be great writing. So it's your job to stand out in that regard. It almost puts more of an emphasis on writing because now the pack is so much more crowded that everybody can do it. The great writers are going to stand out more than ever. Like Dwayne's writing, Chuck Mindenhall's writing, Thomas Gervasi's writing. Those guys who truly go above and beyond when everybody else is shooting BB guns, those machine guns are even louder, right? So I like what's happened. I like all these people coming into it and thinking they can do it and trying to do it because all it does is create that cream. The cream at the top just stands out that much more. So I like that personally.
So when you're writing a story, a lot of people are writing the same stories, the same headlines. You know, Connor said this about Khabib, or John Jones is coming back after the USADA thing, just as a couple of examples. Do you look for kind of a different angle when you're writing? Are you like, look, I don't offer anything to this platform that's already been written, so let me try and take a different angle altogether when I write this story?
1,000,000%, man. There's times where I'll straight up tell guys at Flow, just pass on a story. You know, I don't care. You don't have to rewrite that John Jones is unsuspended now. You know, there's times where I'll straight up pass on stories that I know would get a lot of clicks just because I don't feel it does anything for the brand or it offers anything valuable to the discussion. But just like I kind of just touched on how great writing will stand out more than ever, that has also created a challenge with me to think of unique angles on the same story. So, okay, John Jones is coming back. Who are three great matchups for him on his return? And that's the old school Bleacher Report trick, right? The listicle or the slideshow. But it's things that people love. And if you do legitimate analysis on it and have a great discussion around why he's coming back, you can still have the SEO impact of having John Jones and USADA in the headline. But then you're offering a unique angle. You know, you could repurpose news all day, but let's advance the story a little bit. And I think that's where the challenge comes in. And it's a fun challenge for me, man. I really enjoy dissecting this and trying to think of ways to attack it in ways that other people aren't. So while I understand where the strict news has its purpose and breaking news is always going to be king as far as traffic and eyeballs go and reach, breaking news is always huge. But if you're not the person breaking the news, then I think it is your responsibility then to advance the news.
I agree with you. You know, everybody knows that Ariel Helwani is going to be there, and he's going to be breaking the stories, whether the UFC likes it or not. And then you end up having, like, Nolan King, who, through some sheer ability he has, is able to break these stories. But you're right. I mean, like, when I ended up talking about the Michael Chiesa lawsuit, I was talking with Michael Chiesa's coach, Rick Little, and it just kind of occurred to me, I'm like, how has nobody reached out to the legal team itself and written this story? So you want to try and find those newer angles because you feel like it's your journalistic integrity and responsibility. But you're right, and I like the fact that you mentioned the SEO fields. You know, these are things that people need to know when they're trying to get traffic around their website. And it's a really tedious but also incredibly important aspect of all of this job that goes into MMA reporting.
Yeah, man, there's so many layers to it, and it's crazy. You have to know all of that stuff now. And in today's day and age, social media is just as important as website traffic. And it's insane to think that, but you have to – I don't know. You know, I can't say what you have to do or not do. But for me, personally, at Flow Combat, I always view it as just Flow Combat. Everything that is under Flow Combat, the website, every social media channel, everything we do is our brand. So everything has to be cohesive and everything has to be pushing the bar across all levels. And I feel like that's the only way you can really get it to work. You know, you have to know it on all levels. You have to be dialed in on all levels, care about everything, because people will notice when you start slacking. People will notice when you put out something shitty. You know, I've half-assed some Photoshops before, and the reception is not nice, man. People on social media are not nice when you put out when you put out shitty work, and I'm like, yeah, I probably should have spent a little more time on that. You're right. So just being buttoned up, you know, quality never goes out of style. So just keep, I feel like people need to keep that in mind.
If you could look at yourself now, like, let's say it's the Hunter from, you know, 10 years ago, you're in this heavy journalistic AP style. Would you do anything different as MMA has kind of progressed, or do you think what's beautiful about MMA is the fact that it naturally progresses itself in the reporting style?
Yeah, it does naturally progress, but if Hunter from 10 years ago saw what Hunter now was doing, he'd be busting out the ruler and slapping my knuckles with it. You know, it's nothing I do is by the book anymore. And honestly, man, this whole discussion, it's really funny that we're kind of having this talk, because I've distanced myself from the very idea of journalism as it pertains to MMA. You know, I don't feel that we're journalists, or 95% of us are not journalists, I should say. And I feel like the whole, like, World MMA Awards Best Journalist of the Year, it's like, if Kareem Zidane doesn't win that, then we've all failed, because he's the only one doing actual journalism. Like, I have nothing against these people who want to call themselves journalists. It's like, but just understand that you're a PR guy and you're a mouthpiece for the PR guy. You had something spoon-fed to you, or you sent a text message to check on it and got something back. You didn't do real hardcore digging. There wasn't a lot of effort there. It's more a study in human relationships. How much do these fighter managers trust you? How much do these people of authority trust you to give out whatever news that they're feeding you? So people think that, man, like, we're doing some kind of hardcore reporting, but half the time when you break news, it's because somebody came to you and said, hey, this is about to happen. Feel free to talk about it, because they want to get the word out there. Is that journalism? I really don't think so. And I think that the notion that journalism even matters in MMA, only at the very top. You know, if you're not doing what Kareem's doing, what Mark Ramondi does, what Paul Gift can do, if you're not doing that kind of stuff, then stop calling yourself that, in my opinion, because it's not true to what you're actually doing.
Wow, that's a really unique standpoint on that. I mean, I've seen people from all over the place, and, you know, again, when you grow up in that journalism life, you want to say that you're a journalist. I've never actually considered myself to be, oh, shit, okay, I might not actually be a journalist here, but you still want to follow those rules. Like, and that's the biggest thing for me is if that's the case, I need to get the inverted pyramid style out of my head. I need to completely let it go and find a whole unique different way of writing about things. But it's funny because there are so many writers who are trying to emulate other writers. And I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if you had the ability to kind of talk to all of these MMA journalists, let's bring them all in a room, a fictitious room. What are you saying to the crowd to kind of make them inspired, but also challenge them?
That's a great question. And I got to mull on that a bit. I had never really considered that. First off, I wouldn't want to help them out because they're my competitors. No, just kidding. No. I think in general we need to be less, we need to act like we care less about. A lot of times I think we put on a front and act like we're either offended by things or so like deeply troubled by things that really don't bother us or really don't affect us. I think we can be fans. I think we can have a little more fun than we generally have. I think it's way too serious. I think that's the number one thing is that a lot of them take themselves way too seriously, man. It's like even if you are practicing real journalism, it's still ultimately MMA, man. Like this is a weird and wacky and just, you know, it's a dumb sport at its core. It's hilarious. You know, we can have fun with this sport and how amazing it is when you just, it's two people inside a steel cage beating the shit out of each other at its core. Like, let's not ever forget that's what it is. You know, we're not reporting live from the battlefront in Afghanistan. You know, it's not that serious. So we have the opportunity to have some fun with it. So I think loosening up, having some fun, that's, if you look at Flow Combat social media, you know, that's very obvious that that's something that I try to do all the time. Don't be afraid to curse. You know, you can, we're all big boys and big girls around here. We're still fans. We're still people. Just be a person. Like, stop. Don't be a character that you're portraying.
Wow. That was actually, that's a great way of putting things. And I like that. It kind of makes me think I can scale things back and not be so judgmental of my own writing. Be like, look, man, is this your voice? Yeah. All right. Then it's good. That's what people want. But
you nailed it right there.
But Hunter, we've got you for another couple of minutes. And again, I appreciate the time, my man. I just want to hit on a couple of headlines from you. Great stuff talking about Flow Combat. And I'm excited, obviously, to see all the coverage you have coming up for UFC 229. But as we look at UFC 229, one of the first victims that we saw from the fight card, Sugar Shane O'Malley, is out. He tested positive with USADA. What have you gained from this story as far as why precisely he's out? Because we all know, like, look, he tested positive for marijuana. Are we really going to cut a guy from that because of what we know about it?
Well, I think marijuana is not, it's not tested out of competition anymore. So I think what he actually got busted for is that Osterine. I'm not even sure how you say it, to be honest, but I know Tim Means has been caught with it in the past. Some other guys have been caught with it in the past. So it's very common to be that supplements can be tainted with this. So I think that's what it was. And I think ultimately he'll be cleared. I think, I'm not sure how I feel about the fact that they're finally like, hey, we're not going to announce this, you know, innocent until proven guilty, but then he comes out and tells on himself. It's definitely noble and definitely good to get ahead of the story, I think. In his eyes, you know, he can kind of set the narrative, so to speak. So I think that's smart on his part and a good play on his part. It's unfortunate, man. That's really all I feel about it. It was a great opportunity for him to showcase his skills on the biggest card of the year. And he's a guy that the UFC is clearly wanting to push. And he's marketable from so many different angles. I think people underestimate how impactful he can be to the younger generation to help bring this younger generation along into the sport. You know, I'm a huge football fan too, a huge Steelers fan, and he reminds me a lot of Juju Smith-Schuster, the Steelers wide receiver, who has like really spoken to a different generation and really become a superstar in Pittsburgh and beyond just based on being a young kid who gets it and relates with them. And I think that Sugar Sean was right there, and he's still right there. You know, this isn't going to derail his career, especially because of the nature of what went down. And like I said, I think he'll eventually be cleared of it and we'll forget about it. But right now it just sucks that the train couldn't have gained a little momentum on Saturday. But yeah, it happens, man. He's not the first and he's not the last that we'll see this happen to do.
you brought up J.J. Schuster-Smith, and you kind of put a foul taste in my mouth because I was looking at him for my fantasy draft and wanted him, and literally like two picks before his mind, I'm like, all right, I got J.J. Schuster-Smith. He got taken. So I was a little upset about that, but that's all right. We'll move on. But the bigger story here to me is 2 years ago on this show, Mike Heck and I were talking about the holy shit story that we're going to see. What's going to be the holy shit story of the upcoming year? And I said, quite verbatim, was if USADA keeps flagging fighters so close to competition, the UFC is going to make some serious modifications as to drug testing and even who is in charge of that. Is this something that UFC needs to look at now with USADA because they're testing these people and they're coming back, or is it still on the fighter themselves?
I think the fighters need to remain diligent for sure with what they're putting into their bodies, but we've seen enough, I feel like, legitimately tainted supplement cases, and Sugar Sean's case and Tim Means' case are the two that really stick out to me. I feel like UFC should look at, you know, you use the word need. I don't know that they need to necessarily. It has ruined a lot of good fights in my eyes, and I wish USADA was not involved in the sport at all, but I understand why, and they want to grow the sport, want to seem legitimate and seem like everything's safe and, you know, looking out for their best interests. That's all great too, but I wish it would go away and go back to the olden days where when a card was set, that's the card that happened on fight night.
No, I agree with you, and I think that that's actually making the sport possibly lose fans. You know, every sport has their problem area, and I think right now this is MMA and where they could actually make things right. And I'm not saying dump USADA altogether. I'm just saying, like, look, man, this isn't the fucking Olympics. We can do this a little differently. This is still prize fighting. Let's make this beneficial to everybody involved. We can punish the fighters, but let's do it in a more valiant effort.
Right. For me, I just feel like weight cutting is the more legitimate issue, the bigger issue at hand. You know, I think they've misplaced their resources, but then again, there's no United States Anti-Weight Cutting Association, you know, to monitor that. So it's a little tougher. We've seen one championship do it to a degree, kind of monitor weight cuts, but then there's always question marks about how legitimate their method is too. So I don't know what the right answer is there. I just feel like placing all of your time and energy in steroids is not the right place. And I do feel that they're making the right changes though. You know, with John Jones's reduced sanction, I think that's a good indication that maybe some things will lighten up a little bit. But coming out the gates, it was obviously not going to be perfect. So there have been hiccups, but I genuinely feel that they're getting smoothed out a little bit. This innocent until proven guilty thing is a good step as well. So I'm down with the changes, and I just hope that we see them keep coming.
Absolutely. You know what, Hunter, I got one more thing for you, and this is kind of going to roll right into it with USADA and the flags. We have John Jones. We're still trying to figure out what his fight is going to be. A lot of people are saying it's going to be Alexander Gustafsson, part two. Some people want to see it against DC. We're seeing the concept that DC may be stripped of his light heavyweight title. Hunter, when you see all these stories, and maybe you're in the know a little bit better than some of the rest of us, how do you see this playing out for John Jones and his return to the UFC?
Yeah, I'm definitely not in. No, by any means. I speculate just like everybody else on this. I feel like based on the data we have, the reports we've seen, Gustafsson part two seems like the most likely option. And it's funny because everybody's worried about John Jones's ring rust. He's fought more recently than Gustafsson. That's a crazy fact if you look into it. You know, Gustafsson's last fight was, I think, in May, and John fought in July. So it's nuts that he's fought more recently and could actually be the less rusty of the two. But I saw, I think Jonathan Snowden tweeted that he would like John Jones to have a tune-up. Just he has so much to lose coming back, and I definitely agree with that. I would like to see John versus kind of a lower top 10 guy, maybe like 8, 9, 10-ish kind of guy, like the OSP fight at, when was that, UFC 197 or whatever, the last time he was coming back and he fought OSP. I feel like that kind of fight would benefit him coming back. Not because I don't think he can't compete and beat Gus or DC. I would still favor him in both those fights, but there's just so much at stake take so much for him to lose and so much of a need for him to make a statement that I feel like it would benefit him to take somebody a little further down the ladder. But gun to my head, if you ask me what's going to happen, I say that Gustafsson fight that's been rumored for, I think, UFC 232. I can 100% see that.
So we know that DC doesn't have a lot of time left. You know, he has hinted at retirement time and time again. You know, obviously he's going to be in the booth, you know, for years, breaking down fights after this. Do you see a DC John Jones rematch before DC retires? Or do you just think us in the know look at this and say, there's just no way that DC can win this? John Jones is a fucking alien when it comes to fighting. And, you know, DC had his moment and he made his money and good on him. He's going to make that money continuing. Do you think that this fight needs to happen and do you see it happening?
No, I don't think it needs to happen, but I do see it happening. Yes, I do think that they're going to run it back for part three. And I think it's going to go even worse than part two for DC. It's just a product of him getting older, Jones getting better, and at its core, Jones is a horrible matchup for DC. He is exactly the style that DC doesn't want to face. He can't take John down, so he can't dictate where the fight goes. John's chin and reach is incredible, so he rarely gets clipped with those power shots. There's just nothing DC can do against him. So he's really just a horrible matchup, and it's a shame, because if John Jones never existed, DC might be the greatest fighter of all time. Not just the best light heavyweight of all time, but the greatest fighter of all time. John Jones is the perfect kryptonite for him. So does it need to happen? I don't think it needs to happen, because I think we know how it goes, and I think it's only getting worse as time goes on for DC. So need, no, but want, hell yeah. Hell yeah, I want to see part three of that, because it's a mega fight. It's one of the few mega fights the UFC has left, and that fight's going to sell. That fight's going to get the eyeballs. And it's still, you know, as much as I say John Jones is his kryptonite, DC, you can't count that guy out, man. Would it surprise you if DC somehow beat Jones? It really wouldn't. He's that good to where it's just like, damn, like, he did it on fight night. He finally showed up, finally cracked the code. Like, I don't expect him to, but it also wouldn't surprise me, so that makes it incredibly interesting.
Ladies and gentlemen, Hunter Holmsteck, the great part about, cutting up with, like, you and James Lynch and Mike Heck is I can just ask some questions and then sit back and listen and educate myself. Like, that's literally my favorite part of this job. It's like, hey, I get to talk with MMA guys about MMA. This is awesome. And I don't really have to add much to the dialogue at all. I just get to sit here and ask the questions I know I want to ask and learn from it.
That's great, man. Well, I'm glad I could shed a little insight. I hope you don't take it too much to heart, because I'm pretty much full of shit on everything I say, so I wouldn't care too much about what I said.
I'm just
making this shit up, to be honest with you.
Well, that's all we can do. You know, we're educated enough on the sport that when people ask us questions, we're going to give them our opinions. Doesn't mean that those opinions are fact, you know? That's how sport became beautiful. But, Hunter, I know that you're getting ready to get out to Vegas. I'm going to put the over-under of articles that you personally have to write this week leading up to the fight at 30. Is that being conservative still?
No, I'll go under that for sure, just based on my role. You know, I don't write as much as I used to. I won't be personally writing that many. However, if it's just articles I'm editing and publishing and videos and things like that, if you count tweets and Instagram posts and YouTube videos and Facebook uploads, then we could probably set the bar at like 200. And that is, and we'll still go over that, guarantee it.
Well, I mean, you've got James Lynch who's going to be joining you out there, and you know, give him a big hello for me. That man has been just a true inspiration in the MMA community for some time. But Hunter, obviously, we know we'll find you at Flow Combat when UFC 229 is done. What does Hunter do to decompress? Is there any sort of decompressing on this?
Oh, of course. Proper number 12, shout out. Proper. No, just kidding. Yeah, pour some bourbon, man. Enjoy my family. Enjoy my girlfriend and my dog. Enjoy all of that. I love, you know, hanging out with them. And that's the biggest thing that you miss covering this MMA grind. Like we said earlier, Saturdays don't exist anymore. And when you do this for years upon years upon years, it stresses out those relationships. And that's why the journalists, the Ariels, the Brett Okamotas, the John Morgans, these guys who have lives and families and things, people don't respect how much they put that on the line when they're out at these events. They just think, oh, you're there getting these interviews and having the time of your life at these events. It's like, well, the event is fun, but you're discrediting all the sacrifices that go into it as well. So there, it's a double-edged sword, man, and I always look forward to just decompressing, but at the same time, you don't get to decompress long. It's just like we talked about with the momentum. You know, you can't lose that momentum, especially off something as big as this. I'm going to want to keep it rolling as soon as I get home. So it's straight out of this and then straight into whatever we have coming up on Flow Combat. You know, that's the whole other layer of all of this, is that we live stream regional MMA and Muay Thai events on Flow Combat. So that just adds another layer of work and exposure that we have to get out there. So it never stops, man. I wish that I could truly decompress, and I will actually be going to Denver to visit a college friend in November to finally kick back and just enjoy. But when I get back from 229, it won't be time yet. It's going to be right back to the grind.
Well, we appreciate the time for you. Always enjoy cutting up with you. And again, a little baffling it took me this long to get in. I probably end up driving by Flow Combat's headquarters when I'm out here in Austin, probably on the way to get some barbecue or whatever, but I'm waiting for Proper 12 to get out here. I don't know if it's here yet.
Well, keep an eye out, man, and then whenever next time I'm down in Austin to visit Flow Sports HQ, probably in December, I would say, let's definitely snag a little glass of Proper 12 and some barbecue.
I like that, man. You don't have to threaten me with a good time. But ladies and gentlemen, Hunter Holmstead coming on. We appreciate your time, my man. Thank you for everything, and we look forward to all your coverage for UFC 229 and advancing in mixed martial arts.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, man.